Welcome to the Daily Radio Bible. Today is Saturday. It's August the 5th, day 217 in our journey through the Bible. Hello to everyone out there. My name is Hunter, and I am home now, or at least I ought to be. I'm doing this recording a day ahead because yesterday was a travel day, and, well, I figured by the time I got home, I might be a little bit too tired to do anything but just call it a day. Well, speaking of this day, we are in the book of 2 Kings, chapter 23, 2 Chronicles 35, and John chapter 7. And as always, we are reading through the New Living Translation. What do you say we jump right in here? 2 Kings chapter 23. Josiah's religious reforms. Then the king summoned all the elders of Judah and Jerusalem. And the king went up to the temple of the Lord with all the people of Judah and Jerusalem, along with the priests and the prophets, all the people from the least to the greatest. There the king read to them the entire book of the covenant that had been found in the Lord's temple. The king took his place of authority beside the pillar and renewed the covenant in the Lord's presence. He pledged to obey the Lord by keeping all his commands, laws, and decrees with all his heart and soul. In this way, he confirmed all the terms of the covenant that were written in the scroll, and all the people pledged themselves to the covenant. The king instructed Hilkiah, the high priest, and the priests of the second rank, and the temple gatekeepers to remove from the Lord's temple all the articles that were used to worship Baal, Asherah, and all the powers of the heavens. The king had all these things burned outside Jerusalem on the terrace of the Kidron Valley, and he carried the ashes away to Bethel. He did away with the idolatrous priests who had been appointed by the previous kings of Judah, for they had offered sacrifices at the pagan shrines throughout Judah, and even in the vicinity of Jerusalem. They had also offered sacrifices to Baal and the sun and the moon and the constellations and to all the powers of the heavens. The king removed the Asherah pole from the Lord's temple, and he took it outside Jerusalem to the Kidron Valley, where he burned it. Then he ground the ashes of the pole dust and threw the dust over the graves of the people. He also tore down the living quarters of the male and female shrine prostitutes that were inside the temple of the Lord, where the women wove coverings for the Asherah pole. Josiah brought to Jerusalem all the priests who were living in other towns of Judah. He also defiled the pagan shrines, where they had offered sacrifices, all the way from Geba to Beersheba. He destroyed the shrines at the entrance to the gate of Joshua, the governor of Jerusalem. This gate was located to the left of the city gate as one enters the city. The priests who had served at the pagan shrines were not allowed to serve at the Lord's altar in Jerusalem, but they were allowed to eat unleavened bread with the other priests. Then the king defiled the altar of Topheth in the valley of Ben-Hinnom, so no one could ever again use it to sacrifice a son or daughter in the fire as an offering to Moloch. He removed from the entrance of the Lord's temple the horse statues that the former kings of Judah had dedicated to the sun. They were near the quarters of Nethan-Melech, the eunuch, an officer in the court. The king also burned the chariots dedicated to the sun. Josiah tore down the altars that the kings of Judah had built on the palace roof above the upper room of Ahaz. The king destroyed the altars that Manasseh had built in the two courtyards of the Lord's temple. He smashed them to bits and scattered the pieces in the Kidron Valley. The king also desecrated the pagan shrines east of Jerusalem, to the south of Mount Corruption, where King Solomon of Israel had built shrines for Ashtoreth, the detestable goddess of the Sidonians, and for Chemosh, the detestable god of the Moabites, and for Moloch, the vile god of the Ammonites. He smashed the sacred pillars and cut down the Asherah poles. Then he desecrated these places by scattering human bones over them. The king also tore down the altar at Bethel, the pagan shrine that Jeroboam, son of Nebat, had made when he caused Israel to sin. He burned down the shrine and ground it to dust, and he burned the Asherah pole. Then Josiah turned around and noticed several tombs in the side of the hill. He ordered that the bones be brought out, and he burned them on the altar of Bethel to desecrate them. This happened just as the Lord had promised through the man of God, when Jeroboam stood beside the altar at the festival. Then Josiah turned and looked up at the tomb of the man of God who had predicted these things. "What is that monument over there?" Josiah asked. And the people of the town told him, "It is the tomb of the man of God who came from Judah and predicted the very things that you have just done to the altar at Bethel." Josiah replied, "Leave it alone. Don't disturb his bones." So they did not burn his bones or those of the old prophet from Samaria. Then Josiah demolished all the buildings at the pagan shrines in the towns of Samaria, just as he had done at Bethel. They had been built by the various kings of Israel and had made the Lord very angry. He executed the priests of the pagan shrines on their own altars, and he burned human bones on the altars to desecrate them. Finally, he returned to Jerusalem. King Josiah then issued this order to all the people: "You must celebrate the Passover to the Lord your God as required in this book of the covenant." There had not been a Passover celebration like that since the time when the judges ruled in Israel, nor throughout all the years of the kings of Israel and Judah. But in the 18th year of King Josiah's reign, this Passover was celebrated to the Lord in Jerusalem. Josiah also got rid of the mediums and psychics, the household gods, the idols, and every other kind of detestable practice, both in Jerusalem and throughout the land of Judah. He did this in obedience to the laws written in the scroll that Hilkiah the priest had found in the Lord's temple. Never before had there been a king like Josiah, who turned to the Lord with all his heart and soul and strength, obeying all the laws of Moses. And there has never been a king like him since. Even so, the Lord was very angry with Judah because of all the wicked things Manasseh had done to provoke him. For the Lord said, "I will also banish Judah from my presence, just as I have banished Israel. And I will reject my chosen city of Jerusalem and the temple where my name was to be honored." The rest of the events in Josiah's reign and all his deeds are recorded in the book of the history of the kings of Judah. While Josiah was king, Pharaoh Necho, king of Egypt, went to the Euphrates River to help the king of Assyria. King Josiah and his army marched out to fight him, but King Necho killed him when they met at Megiddo. Josiah's officers took his body back in a chariot from Megiddo to Jerusalem and buried him in his own tomb. Then the people of the land anointed Josiah's son Jehoahaz and made him the next king. Jehoahaz was 23 years old when he became king, and he reigned in Jerusalem 3 months. His mother was Hamutal, the daughter of Jeremiah from Libna. He did what was evil in the Lord's sight, just as his ancestors had done. Pharaoh Necho put Jehoahaz in prison at Riblah in the land of Hamath to prevent him from ruling in Jerusalem. He also demanded that Judah pay 7,500 pounds of silver and 75 pounds of gold as tribute. Pharaoh Necho then installed Eliakim, another of Josiah's sons, to reign in the place of his father. He changed Eliakim's name to Jehoiakim. Jehoahaz was taken to Egypt as a prisoner, where he died. In order to get the silver and gold demanded as tribute by Pharaoh Necho, Jehoiakim collected a tax from the people of Judah, requiring them to pay in proportion to their wealth. Jehoiakim was 25 years old when he became king, and he reigned in Jerusalem 11 years. His mother was Zebediah, the daughter of Padiah from Rumia. He did what was evil in the Lord's sight, just as his ancestors had done. 2 Chronicles 35. Then Josiah announced that the Passover of the Lord would be celebrated in Jerusalem, and so the Passover lamb was slaughtered on the 14th day of the first month. Josiah also assigned the priests to their duties and encouraged them in their work at the temple of the Lord. He issued this order to the Levites, who were to teach all Israel and who had been set apart to serve the Lord: "Put the holy ark in the temple that was built by Solomon, son of David, the king of Israel. You no longer need to carry it back and forth on your shoulders. Now spend your time serving the Lord your God and his people Israel. Report for duty according to the family divisions of your ancestors, following the direction of King David of Israel and the directions of his son Solomon. Then stand in the sanctuary at the place appointed for your family division and help the families assigned to you as they bring their offerings to the temple. Slaughter the Passover lambs, purify yourselves, and prepare to help those who come. Follow all the directions that the Lord gave through Moses." Then Josiah provided 30,000 lambs and young goats for the people's Passover offering, along with 3,000 cattle from the king's own flocks and herds. The king's officials also made willing contributions to the people, priests and Levites, Hilkiah, Zechariah, and Jehiel, the administrator of God's temple, gave the priests 2,600 lambs and young goats and 300 cattle as Passover offerings. The Levite leaders, Conaniah and his brother Shemaiah, and Nathanael, as well as Hashabiah, Jael, Jozabad, gave 5,000 lambs and young goats and 500 cattle to the Levites for their Passover offerings. When everything was ready for the Passover celebration, the priests and the Levites took their places, organized by their divisions, as the king had commanded. The Levites then slaughtered the Passover lambs and presented the blood to the priests, who sprinkled the blood on the altar, while the Levites prepared the animals. They divided the burnt offerings among the people by their family groups, so they could offer them to the Lord as prescribed in the book of Moses. They did the same with the cattle. Then they roasted the Passover lambs as prescribed, and they boiled the holy offering in the pots, kettles, and pans, and brought them out quickly so the people could eat them. Afterward, the Levites prepared Passover offerings for themselves and for the priests, the descendants of Aaron, because the priests had been busy from morning till evening, burning the offerings and the fat portions. The Levites took responsibility for all these preparations. The musicians, descendants of Asaph, were in their assigned places following the commands that had been given by David, Asaph, Heman, and Jeduthun, the king's seer. The gatekeepers guarded the gates and did not need to leave their posts of duty, for their Passover offerings were prepared for them by their fellow Levites. The entire ceremony for the Lord's Passover was completed that day. All the burnt offerings were sacrificed on the altar of the Lord as King Josiah had commanded. All the Israelites presented in Jerusalem celebrated Passover and the festival of unleavened bread for 7 days. Never since the time of the prophet Samuel had there been such a Passover. None of the kings of Israel had ever kept a Passover as Josiah did, involving all the priests and Levites, all the people of Jerusalem, and people from all over Judah and Israel. This Passover was celebrated in the 18th year of Josiah's reign. After Josiah had finished restoring the temple, King Necho of Egypt led his army up from Egypt to do battle at Charmesh on the Euphrates River, and Josiah and his army marched out to fight him. But King Necho sent messengers to Josiah with this message: "What do you want with me, king of Judah? I have no quarrel with you today. I am on my way to fight another nation, and God has told me to hurry. Do not interfere with God, who is with me, or he will destroy you." But Josiah refused to listen to Necho, to whom God had indeed spoken, and he would not turn back. Instead, he disguised himself and led his army into battle on the plain of Megiddo. But the enemy archers hit King Josiah with their arrows and wounded him. He cried out to his men, "Take me from the battle, for I am badly wounded." So they lifted Josiah out of his chariot and placed him in another chariot. Then they brought him back to Jerusalem, where he died. He was buried there in the royal cemetery, and all Judah and Jerusalem mourned for him. The prophet Jeremiah composed funeral songs for Josiah, and to this day choirs still sing these sad songs about his death. These songs of sorrow have become a tradition and are recorded in the Book of Laments. The rest of the events of Josiah's reign and his acts of devotion, carried out according to what was written in the law of the Lord from beginning to end, are all recorded in the Book of the Kings of Israel and Judah. John chapter 7. Jesus and his brothers. After this, Jesus traveled around Galilee. He wanted to stay out of Judea, where the Jewish leaders were plotting his death. But soon it was time for the Jewish festival of shelters, and Jesus' brothers said to him, "Leave here and go to Judea, where your followers can see your miracles. You can't become famous if you hide like this. If you can do such wonderful things, show yourself to the world." For even his brothers didn't believe in him. Jesus replied, "Now is not the right time for me to go, but you can go anytime. The world can't hate you, but it does hate me, because I accuse it of doing evil. You go on. I'm not going to this festival because my time has not yet come." After saying these things, Jesus remained in Galilee. But after his brothers left for the festival, Jesus also went, though secretly, staying out of public view. The Jewish leaders tried to find him at the festival and kept asking if anyone had seen him. There was a lot of grumbling about him among the crowds. Some argued, "He's a good man," but others said, "He's nothing but a fraud who deceives the people." But no one had the courage to speak favorably about him in public, for they were afraid of getting in trouble with the Jewish leaders. Then, midway through the festival, Jesus went up to the temple and began to teach. The people were surprised when they heard him. "How does he know so much when he hasn't been trained?" they asked. So Jesus told them, "My message is not my own. It comes from God who sent me. Anyone who wants to do the will of God will know whether my teaching is from God or merely my own. Those who speak for themselves want glory only for themselves. But a person who seeks to honor the one who sent him speaks truth, not lies. Moses gave you the law, but none of you obeys it. In fact, you're all trying to kill me." The crowd replied, "You're demon-possessed. Who's trying to kill you?" Jesus replied, "I did one miracle on the Sabbath, and you were amazed. But you work on the Sabbath too when you obey Moses' law of circumcision. Actually, this tradition of circumcision began with the patriarchs, long before the law of Moses. For if the correct time for circumcising your son falls on the Sabbath, you go ahead and do it, so as not to break the law of Moses. So why should you be angry with me for healing a man on the Sabbath? Look beneath the surface so you can judge correctly." Some of the people who lived in Jerusalem started to ask each other, "Isn't this the man they're trying to kill? But here he is speaking in public and they say nothing to him. Could our leaders possibly believe that he is the Messiah? But how could he be? For we know where this man comes from. When the Messiah comes, he will simply appear. No one will know where he comes from." While Jesus was teaching in the temple, he called out, "Yes, you know me, and you know where I come from. But I'm not here on my own. The one who sent me is true, and you don't know him. But I know him because I come from him, and he sent me to you." Then the leaders tried to arrest him, but no one laid a hand on him because his time had not yet come. Many among the crowds at the temple believed in him. After all, they said, "Would you expect the Messiah to do more miraculous signs than this man has done?" When the Pharisees heard that the crowds were whispering such things, they and the leading priests sent temple guards to arrest Jesus. But Jesus told them, "I will be with you only a little longer. Then I will return to the one who sent me. You will search for me, but not find me. And you can't go where I am going." The Jewish leaders were puzzled by this statement. "Where is he planning to go?" they asked. "Is he thinking of leaving the country and going to the Jews in other lands? Maybe he will even teach the Greeks. What does he mean when he says, 'You will search for me, but not find me, and you cannot go where I am going'?" On the last day, the climax of the festival, Jesus stood and shouted to the crowds, "Anyone who is thirsty may come to me. Anyone who believes in me may come and drink, for the scriptures declare rivers of living water will flow from his heart." When he said living water, he was speaking of the Spirit who would be given to everyone believing in him. But the Spirit had not yet been given because Jesus had not yet entered into his glory. When the crowds heard him, they said, "Some of them declare, 'Surely this man is the prophet we've been expecting.'" Others said, "He is the Messiah." Still others said, "But he can't be. Will the Messiah come from Galilee? For the scriptures clearly state that the Messiah will be born of the royal line of David in Bethlehem, the village where King David was born." So the crowd was divided about him. Some even wanted to arrest him, but no one laid a hand on him. When the temple guards returned without having arrested Jesus, the leading priests and Pharisees demanded, "Why didn't you bring him in?" "We have never heard anyone speak like this," the guards responded. "Have you been led astray too?" the Pharisees mocked. "Is there a single one of us rulers or Pharisees who believes in him? This foolish crowd follows him, but they are ignorant of the law. God's curse is on them." Then Nicodemus, the leader who had met with Jesus earlier, spoke up. "Is it legal to convict a man before he is given a hearing?" he asked. They replied, "Are you from Galilee too? Search the scriptures and see for yourself. No prophet ever comes from Galilee." Then the meeting broke up, and everyone went home. Now may the one who comes from Galilee, may the one who gives us living water, bless this, the reading of his word. Amen. During this festival celebration, each day the priest would carry water up from the Pool of Siloam. There are these steps from the pool that go all the way up to the gate of the temple and a bronze altar. And each day the priest would carry this water up, and then he would pour the water out onto the altar, and it would flow down the steps. This was a huge part of the celebration of the Festival of Shelters. And on the seventh and final day of the celebration, this marked the climax of the whole party. John makes sure that we understand that this is the climax of it all. This act of pouring out the water is a symbol of the Messianic age, when the Messiah would come and he would pour out his spirit upon all his people. This is what Isaiah 44:3 says, "I will pour out water to quench your thirst and to irrigate your parched fields, and I will pour out my spirit on your descendants and my blessing on your children." This act of the priest pouring out the water on the steps each day for seven successive days was a picture of this scripture, of this promise of the Messiah who would come and pour out his spirit upon God's children. And Jesus uses this moment at the climax of the festival to stand there on those steps at that moment, and he shouts out to the crowd. John makes sure that he's making sure that we know that everyone hears him as he declares this amazing thing about himself. He is telling the people present that he is the Messiah. He's the one that this whole ceremony is talking about. It's picturing him and what he will do, what he offers the world. He says, "If you come to me, you're going to have rivers of living water pouring out on you." Not just one little jar that a priest carries up each day and pours out over the steps. No, we're talking rivers of living water pouring forth from you, in you, out into the world, giving you life, giving you purpose, bearing fruit in your life, and giving you hope. Jesus has no interest in being famous like his brothers were goading him towards. No, his interests lie in what God has called him to do, his Father has asked him to do, to go, to be the Messiah, to fulfill the scriptures, to let the world know that he alone is the source of living water. He is the source of our salvation. He is the source of our life in the Holy Spirit. By coming to him, we can have this life, and rivers of water can flow from us into the world. You know, I've stood on these very steps where Jesus made this statement, and I've determined to come to him as he is invited, to come to him who is the source of life, who is the source of the Holy Spirit, life that is abundant and free. You don't have to stand on those steps to determine that for yourself today. No, you can do that wherever you're at. Maybe you're on a train making your way into the city. Maybe you're commuting in your car. Maybe you're turning the day down. You're about to go to bed. Once again, we can affirm in our own hearts that we are coming to him who is the source of living water, who is the Messiah. And we can find our life, our strength, our hope, our joy in him and in him alone. We can have that life if we want to. Let's determine right now to receive it, to walk in it, to be free in it. That's the prayer of my own heart today for my own soul, and that's the prayer that I have for my family, for my wife, my daughters, my son, and that's the prayer that I have for you. May it be so. Well, dailyradiobible.com, that's home base out here. That's where we hang our hat, and it's always great to hear from you. So next time you got a moment, take it and let a brother know. Hey, before I let you go, a few things I want you to know is April 2018. I know it's a long way off, but what I would love is for you guys to join me on those very steps that we read about today. We can stand on those steps that look down towards the Valley of Cheesemakers. That's what it's actually called. And it will also be down near where Hezekiah's tunnel is and the Pool of Siloam, where this very story took place, where Jesus stood and made that proclamation that he is the one who has living water for us all. And I would love to join you on those steps, and that's a possibility. All you have to do is head on over to dailyradiobible.com and click on the link there about our upcoming journey to the Holy Land and begin the registration process even now. And get your seat on the bus, and we'll take some steps towards walking in His very footsteps, right where He said those very words. Incredible. Well, check it out, will you? And begin that process even now. Hey, that's about it. Like I said at the beginning of the podcast, this has been a travel day, and I have been traveling all day long, and I am wiped out, my friends, and I think I gotta call it a day. Well, we've done it again. We have spent another day in the Bible, and Lord willing, and the creek don't rise, I fully intend to spend another. That would be tomorrow. And I sure hope you join me. Until that time, let's go forward in God's joy. Let's let His joy be our strength. And let's remember this, that you are loved. No doubt about it. Alrighty, I'll talk to you again tomorrow. You take care. Bye-bye.